Low quality fans of a high quality Bruins franchise, welcome back. We're back in the old digs. I feel great. I feel rested, which was huge. I think I fell asleep at like 6 p.m. yesterday when I got home. I want to talk about all sorts of stuff, and I'm going to try to split this up so it's actually down below. You can see the time markers in case there's a conversation that you just don't give a flying F about, which... I get it. There's so much happening. But I want to talk about a couple of things, mostly Bruins related, but there's other stuff too that I want to touch on. I want to talk about the Zadorov drama, because there isn't one and hasn't been one, and it's all made up and fabricated and dumb. I want to talk about the Bruins trade for Will Borgen, which I've largely just ignored until I got home. I want to talk about Leo's OF account here. I want to talk about the Seattle news that they're trading Shane Wright. And then we're going to talk about a little bit about what's next for the Boston Bruins, which is going to profoundly disappoint you. And that's okay. That's okay. I'm comfortable disappointing you as long as I am being honest. I still feel bad about it, though. Let's talk about the Zadorov drama. And this is actually not going to disappoint anyone, because I saw the just eruption on social medias, which we know all of that's fake. 30% of them are bots, whatever. But I get it. If your reaction, you saw this news that Darnell Nurse was being traded to the Bruins, but it fell through because there was a Bruins player who would not waive their no trade or no move clause. And then a little more speculation later, boom, Zadorov refused to waive anything. Now, everyone is very sensitive right now. The Jaylen Brown situation, all of the Team USA gold members there, other than basically McAvoy, everyone asking out, feeling like they've been slighted, feeling insulted by the team, so off they go. A couple of things here. First of all, the NHL is not the NBA, and while this Team USA gold-winning team, for some reason I can't just say that the right way, despite them all throwing hissy fits and needing to go somewhere else, which some of them super vindicated and others not so much, the NHL is not the NBA. And while I think we're still moving that way towards player empowerment, we've talked about this multiple times, there is still an understanding in the NHL that there is a part of business where players get traded. And that's okay. That happens sometimes. And the relationships between players and front office, although sometimes are rocky, we have not reached the point where everyone's just like, you thought about trading me? I'm leaving. Zadorov also has shown us, I think, through the 2 years being a Bruin, that his character is way beyond taking some news like this and being like, well, I don't care about, right? Like, he has a job to do. He's going to do his job. And we're hoping that his job continues to look more like last year than his first year. Totally different conversation there, though. So I just want to do a little healthy dose of we all need to take a step back and realize this is still part of the league, and we all still have to understand that these rumors, these news articles, this stuff spreads. And sometimes it's true, and players still have to go, hey, that's part of it, but I've got a job to do ahead of me. I got 3 or 4 years left of my contract to do my thing, and if I get moved, I get moved. I negotiated for the protections that I have. I will use them if they come up, but I also know that if it's outside of those protections, I could get moved, and I have to be okay with that. It is your job. You're a millionaire playing a sport. Anyway, I checked in on a couple of things. Now, I'm not an insider, so I had no true source to go to just be like, hey, is this true or not? But there are people I very much trust who I can check with and who let me know their thoughts on it. And then, even more so, there are people online who I very much trust. And all of those people are saying not only is it not Zadorov that had to agree to not agree to waive his no trade clause, but no Bruin did. Negotiations never got to a point where any player other than Nurse had to agree to waive any sort of clauses. Now, of course, tomorrow news could come out that, hey, something did happen. But I need to have a source that I trust, even a little, to go, hey, that probably happened. There is nothing As of 11:22 a.m. on July 4th, there is nothing I have seen that would even indicate this is true from any source that I trust. I think everyone needs to take a step back and realize that you haven't heard it from anyone that you typically hear this news from who's right. So I am really, this is such a nothing burger, and I'm not worried if Zadorov was asked and didn't, because that's A, his right, and B, I think he's the kind of guy that's like, I'm still here to play hockey. And I don't believe it's happened, because I need someone that I trust a lot more than those who have reported on it, saying that this is a real thing. This was just drama that was cooked up, and the internet did its thing. So until something changes, my advice, which is my advice every year, especially around trade deadline, free agency, if you see someone post something like this, block them if it's wrong. Just block them. Just be like, you're a guy who makes stuff up. I have plenty of other insiders to pay attention to. Ba-boom, gone. Just leave them behind. You know? If it's a fan saying like, hey, I wonder if, fine. But when someone says something concrete like that, you get rid of them so you don't have to, just don't have to deal with it again. That's my two bits on that. We'll move on. The Bruins trade for Will Borgen. They trade a 2027 second round pick and a 2028 third rounder. The 2028 third rounder can become a second if the Bruins make the conference finals in either of the next 2 years, and if Borgen plays 50% of the playoff games. I didn't see if this was 50% of the playoff games through those 2 years or 50% of the playoff games in the year they made the conference finals. I'm assuming it was the latter. But we'll see. We'll see. So who is Borgen? He's a 6'3", 205-pound right-handed defenseman, 29 years old, 4 years left on a $4.1 million contract, AAV, meaning it is 4.1 per year, not 4.1 total. 5 goals, 10 assists, and 75 games played last year. Throw that stuff out the window. He is a physical defensive defenseman. He is going to offer you next to nothing offensively. What you are hoping from Borgen is that in the offensive zone, he keeps the puck moving. And in the defensive zone, you never think about him. He's that guy. He's the Carlo. He's the, he must have done a great job today. He was never on the ice when something bad happened defensively. And, you know, once in a while they stand out because they shut down a big play. Great. And then you keep it moving. But this is the prototype of a player who, if I hear your name a bunch, it's probably not a good game for you. He's not typically on the positive side of expected goals for statistics analytically, but he's heavily deployed in the defensive situation into defensive situations, so that alters those analytics quite a bit. And he is often used against strong competition. He is a penalty killer, but statistically hasn't really thrived in that role. He doesn't take a bunch of egregious penalties, but I wouldn't say he defends without taking penalties at a high level. He's still going to take some. He's a strong skater. He's a high motor. He's capable of shutting down rush opportunities for opponents pretty effectively. He's just not going to give you anything offensively. So this is a true defensive defenseman. Now, I think there's two ways to look at this, and neither of them are great, unfortunately, unless you want to do like a really healthy dose of copium, you know? The positive way to look at it is you've got a cost-controlled right-handed defenseman who on his best nights is a shutdown defenseman who can play against the opponent's better players, who's mobile, retrieves the puck well, and skates the puck out of danger starting the breakout. On his best nights, that's who you're getting. So the best way to look at this is, well, maybe he thrives in this situation. If Hampus gets a little bit closer back to what he was, if he's a truly healthy year, we've had that whole conversation about how last year, just it's a little unfair to judge him with all the injuries, but if Hampus is a good partner for him, he fills in that second right-handed defenseman spot, and, you know, he's a positive guy to have on the squad. And for a right-hand defenseman, cost is cost, man, and these guys cost $3 to $4 million. We've seen that over and over and over again. The negative way to look at it is you just gave up more assets, albeit not crazy good ones, but a second is still a second, and now you might be giving up two. Hopefully you're giving up 2 seconds. To bring in the latest in a long, 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 long run of overpaid third-pairing defensemen whose tenure ending is going to be celebrated by the fan base. We did it with Peak. We did it with Forbort before that. I'm deleting anything before that out of my brain. But clearly, over the past 5-6 years, not been pleasant. for exactly this kind of player. My take on it, I'm a little stuck. I am highly afraid of another four warp peak situation, but of course I am, because I am one of the whiniest people on the planet about those exact players, right? I dump on them all the time, and I try not to be unfair, but I typically don't think I'm being unfair with just how unenjoyable they've been to watch as Bruins. Wow, they're just catching strays right now for no reason. It does really feel like we're walking that same path. Not only walking that same path, but they're using the same footprints for it. It's very easy to see the comparisons, although I do think Borgen is a much more mobile skater than those two, which does make a large difference in my heart. All that being said, he's big and mobile. I am going to give this a chance before dunking all over it, because in its best version, this is a cheap option that has really helped you out. Because remember, although you would love to get that second right-hand defenseman and then be a 200-foot guy and excel at both sides of the ice and all of that, if instead what you're getting is someone who's hyper-compatible with Hampus Lindholm, and Hampus can do the offensive lifting on that pair, that's perfect. That is perfect and exactly what you need. You're not going to get a Cale Makar there, you know? But if you find a guy who complements the other guy, and the other guy, again, a lot of stuff has to go right here, but the other guy rebounds a little bit and doesn't have to worry about the defensive side of the puck all that much and can get caught high once in a while because he has this mobile big defender who's really excels at breaking up these rush opportunities, then all of a sudden, you have a dynamic pairing. One does one thing, one does the other. That's how most of the pairings in the league work, right? It's just great to have that guy who can do both next to another guy who can do both. That's not usually feasible. So in its best version, this works out brilliantly. And I'm going to believe in that until I can't, because why wouldn't I? Borgen's had good years. He got this contract for a reason. And he played a couple of years in Seattle, one of the worst-run organizations in the league, and then a year with the Rangers in a down year for everybody. Everybody. I don't love the right side by committee approach, which is what Andrew from the Short Shift Pod was saying in the other video, one of my earlier videos from this week. I don't love that approach, and it does seem like that's what they're going to do. But despite the rumors that Sweeney is going to be involved in trade talks with a few different teams for the right-handed defenseman role, I think it's clear that we have been priced out of a top talent at that position and had to pivot to simply improve. I think Borgen is an improvement on the right side. Period. Good, right? I would have rather not given up a second and third to get there, but that's what we did. And is it a pretty decent-sized contract? Yes. Is it the end of the world, 4.1? No. Will I bitch and moan about it if he turns into another four-board and peak? Every single video. But that's not what's important. There is an easy way to just go, hey, I can see the fit with Hampus, and if it works, it's going to work. If it doesn't, we'll have that conversation when we get there. But you have to be willing to let this play out a little bit. I don't think that it's an overpayment in assets or anything like that. It's not a crazy trade. They identified a guy. They went to get him. Now, this feels like a draft pick to me. This feels like a guy that you took with a draft pick that I liked, that I thought there were options around, and now I have to sit here and see if it works out or not. And to jump the gun in either direction is only going to make me look stupid. I know that the whole point of like chatting with you guys about this stuff is to have an opinion, but once in a while there's one that's such a fence sitter, I'm kind of sitting here going, you know what? I can see either way on this one. I'm just going to be optimistic. And I think you'd be better off just being optimistic, you know, just believe in it rather than assume it's going to go poorly. Leo's offer sheet. Leo Carlson, 21-year-old franchise 1C for the Ducks, just signed an offer sheet worth $18 million a year for 5 years from the Philadelphia Flyers. Apparently, it is a front-loaded with bonuses and would require Ducks ownership to pay big in the first half of the contract, which really only means something to the filthy rich owners who can absolutely afford to do that. I'm not going to weep for the billionaires. The Ducks can match the contract and all this ends, or they can decline to match the contract and the Flyers send their next four first-rounders to Anaheim with no protection. Why did the Flyers do this? Well, first of all, it's fucking funny. It's good stuff. This is exactly what you want to see when your team's not involved. A franchise 1C is nearly impossible to get outside of the draft, and very often has to come from a great pick in the draft. If they think, they being the Flyers, that it's all up from here, who gives a shit about the picks? If you get a top 15 center in the league, which Carlson might not be yet, but looks like he will be soon if he's not very much already there, there's varying degrees. I think we all agree that this guy's going to be a bona fide, true franchise pillar 1C, which at any given time, there's 15 to 18 of those guys in the league. That's so worth it. That's so worth it. Screw the picks. We're getting the guy we need and not giving up any of our players, and we think we're already on an upward trajectory. That's a great use of the picks. I love it from the Flyer side of things. Is it a huge contract? Yeah, it is. Is it a lot of draft capital? Yep, super is. Is this basically one of two ways to get a franchise 1C? Yeah, I love it. I love it. You push the chips in the middle and say, put them on the table. Let's see it. Time to nut up or shut up. I'm impressed. I'm impressed by the Flyers. What can I say? They also have put Anaheim in a bad spot. Since Verbeek dragged his ass on getting this done, along with a few others, a window opened. In an offseason that saw them have a few signings to make and over $30 million to do it, the pressure wasn't quite there. But if they match this, their cap space is largely cut in half, with Cutter Gauthier and Pavel Menchikov still aside. If they don't do this all at the same time, another offer sheet could be coming too. So say they announce today, which would be foolish. They announce today that they're matching the offer sheet. They have 6 more days to do this. You do it on day 7, by the way. You make sure that Leo's good, and then on day 7, you sign it, which handicaps the Flyers from doing anything for a week. That's the downside of offer sheeting. The other team gets a week to decide. You just have to sit there because you can't move those picks, right? And you can't go around offer sheeting a bunch of other guys. Like, you just got to wait. But let's say they match Carlson before the other deals for Menchikov and Gauthier get done. What if another team just swoops in and goes, all right, well, now you're going to spend $13 million on Gauthier, on Cutter. You going to do that? Oh, that's going to leave you with about $4 million left for Pavel. They have to get this largely done at the same time. And I bet Cutter's sitting there going, no, I kind of want to see what you guys do. You know, what am I going to make? your franchise goal scorer. What about me? So they have very successfully, the Flyers, put the Ducks into a weirdly tight window. When before we just sat there and went, they have $1 billion in cap space, they're fine. They have this young up-and-coming core, they're fine. They look like they're going to be a problem for a long time. Just made the playoffs. This hurts. If you're a Ducks fan, this is not fun. Because if you had just, midway through last year, been able to get this guy for $14, $15 million, which would still be like, whoa, 21 years, you wouldn't be dealing with this right now. Funny. Just funny. And if you don't match it, sure, you got the 4 first-rounders, but you better start moving those things, man. You're at the next step of the rebuild. And also, where's your 1C? You have to. What do the Ducks do? They do it, right? They match it. I don't care. It's a 1C, a true franchise-defining first-line center. You match and do everything you can to get Menchikov and Gauthier's deals signed before announcing that you've matched, right? You take it to the 7th day, all 3 are signed at the same time, boom, you keep it moving. You find a way to do that. You have to avoid further offer sheets here. This is incredibly well played by the Flyers. The Flyers know that they are not getting Leo Carlson because the rarest thing in this league is a true top-line center that you can win a cup with. And by all accounts, that is what Leo Carlson is or is going to be. You cannot walk away from that. I don't care the cost. $18 million, at the end of the day, it's just cap space in a rising cap world. Do not screw this up, Anaheim. You have a 1C, you keep them. You have to pay more than you want to. Boo-hoo. You haven't been spending the cap for the past, 8 years? Get the job done. Get it signed. And anyone who's looking at Leo Carlson of like, what are you doing? Look, if I'm Verbeek, I am walking in the room being like, hey, we need to talk to you about building a winner. You know? It's not going to be on this contract, clearly. We're going to try to be clever and find a way. But you soaking up 20% of our damn cap is not really going to help. Now, look, players deserve to get what they get. And this would be the highest paid guy in the league now. But I think on the next contract, Verbeek is probably sitting there going, do us a favor and take, like, just 10% off there, bud. Just let us build around you a little easier. Could you? Would you? But this is your first big contract. And someone reached out and said, Leo, sign this. They didn't get it done for you before. They wanted to play hardball. Just sign this. Your job's done. Because remember, that's what this is for the player. When Leo signs that contract, he goes, oh, okay, it's over. Because I'm either in Philadelphia with this, or I'm in Anaheim with this. That's it. His job's done. As a 21-year-old, I would have been doing backflips. Not because I would have felt selfish or anything like that. Just glad it's over. I'm signed. Let's move on and play some hockey. All right, we'll move on. Shane Wright. Shane Wright, it turns out, is maybe not going to stay a Kraken forever. I know, we're all shocked. Now, Seattle has agreed to find him a new home, and every time I've seen this announced by any of the sources out there, they've all said to a team where they are in need of young centers, right? So clearly this is a development thing. Clearly this is a I haven't gotten a chance thing from Wright's camp, and he wants to go somewhere where there's going to be opportunity to play right away. Now, look, I've routinely called Seattle the worst-run franchise in the league for the past couple of years. And that's not just built off of, like, an expansion team. They should be struggling initially, blah, blah, blah. They have made some signings I really haven't loved. They've made some stuff that I do like, actually. But for the large part, most of the signings I haven't loved. They don't seem to have an identity. They don't seem to have a path forward. They just throw stuff at the wall and hope it sticks is kind of the way I see them. Obviously, Shane Wright is part of that. Now, he's a 22-year-old center, going into the last year of his ELC this year, before becoming an RFA, so he'll be team-controlled. He had 12 goals, 15 assists, and for 27 points in 74 games played in very sheltered minutes last year, playing less than 14 minutes per game in a third- or fourth-line role at times. My problem with this, because Bruins fans see this news, and they're like, oh my gosh, fourth overall pick 4 years ago, had a lot of upside, fast guy. Yeah, I get that. I have no idea what he's supposed to be anymore. It feels like he's had no development over the past couple of years, and I'm willing to make a bet on a guy who at 21 years old had 44 points in 14 minutes average ice time. That was in 2025, not this last season, obviously. This last year was gross, and his attitude seems gross, but like then again, who can blame him with everything that's going on? This is a really difficult situation to read. And then I kind of sat there and went, okay, well, what's the cost? Because I have no idea what they're going to be asking for. The value can't be that high considering how bad he's looked in moments and how Seattle has buried him in the lineup, but he was a fourth overall pick 4 years ago. Honestly, the Bruins also have enough projects that, I don't know, aren't going a little too hard here if you go out of your way for Shane Wright? If you're giving up real assets to go get him? If the price was low, obviously I'm all over it. You need more kicks at the can anytime you can get them. But at this point, I don't mind just focusing on Mitten and Hagens and Patra and Kuznetsov, etc. for these younger guys who are hoping can fill in larger roles. I don't know. This one doesn't sit super well for me as far as the Bruins being a good match for them. Because if they're looking for a team to give real assets back in some way, then I think I'm just out. I think it's a worthwhile, if there was no Mitten, right? If there's no Fraser Mitten, how about that? All of a sudden, I'm much more like, you know, We could give up something real for him, you know? But there is a Frazierman who I want to get more ice time. There is a Higgins who's going to start in the third line, but by the end of the season, you're hoping that he's moving in the top six somewhere. And then there's the Pacher and the who's the Dinovs and the guys who are going to be fighting for this ice time. That I don't mind more competition. It's just at a certain point, you have too many guys who are young and looking for development ice time and not getting it at the level they need to. I know that some people will say, well, the NHL is not a developmental league, but that's not real, you know? Every league is a developmental league because there's always growth to be done up until you hit your true prime, and then you get through that and on the downslope. Like, that's just natural progression there. You're going to have guys who is like, I can no longer learn in the AHL, but the NHL is still going to throw some curveballs at me, and I'm going to need to adapt. I need NHL ice time. Real NHL ice time. I think we have enough of those guys in-house that we do not to bring in another one that will cost us assets. And I think the price is going to surprise us. I really do. He's a center. He's young. He has flashes of potential. I would stay away from Shane Wright. And I think, I'm pretty sure 3 months ago, I was saying something very different. But I've changed my mind on this. I do not want to touch this. Unless it's like, we'll take a fourth for him, which there's no way that's true. There's no way that's true. Yeah, I want to stay away from that. Moving on. Just a little cap section here. What's next for the Bruins? Just put a cap on the video. Just what's next? The top nine is largely set, unless a deal materializes that pushes Elias or Kuznetsov down to the fourth or, you know, out. So right now, what you're kind of looking at, if we go to our little depth chart, you've got Paterka, you've got Zacha, you have Pasta, you have Mittelstadt, you have Geeky. Those guys are all basically guaranteed to start the season in the top six. You have Mitten, Higgins, Kuznetsov, who are all going to be pushing to be a part of that somewhere. You have Elias, who we think should be probably third on the depth chart. It still leaves you with that, like, well, maybe there's a center we could bring in for the top six. Or, you know, you push someone over. It depends on your confidence in your wingers as well. So, but the top nine largely has a lot of guys who are like, this is where we slot in, you know? The fourth line, Janot and Kastelic, are basically in pen. And Corrali has to battle with all of the forwards below him to keep his spot, which I know he was good last year, in depending on when you caught him. But Kastelic can play the wing or can play center, so Corrali is truly battling with everyone. Asamoah, I don't have a ton of hope for, but 13th forward, one of those guys. And when I say not a ton of hope for, it's just he really struggled last year with us. It wasn't a good fit, and we'll see if this year something develops there. But other than that, you've got Steves, you've got Reichel, you've got Ivan, you've got Patra, you've got Duran, you have Lutz Smells, all of these guys who are going to make a push for this, basically his bottom line. There's a lot of players for our forward groups. I'm just not saying like we can't improve in areas. I just think a big swing for a top six guy, while Sweeney will be rumored to be in on a lot of them because he's going to be making the phone calls, I see it unlikely that they add a high-powered forward in this offseason again. For defense, yeah, it could be kind of anything. Obviously, you still want the second right-handed defenseman, but we've talked about that where you're probably largely priced out. They might be looking at bringing up some very cheap DiPietro insurance for the backup role. But the reason I add this little section of what's next for the Bruins, we're largely done. And look, I'm not saying this team is a contender status and this is going to be an awesome year, anything like that. I'm not making any projections. What I am saying is, when you look at what we have and the assets we've already dealt, and it's unlikely, outside of more relationships falling apart across the league, that you see the Bruins do something else here. Do something worth, like, its own video. Let's say that is our bar right now. Yeah, with Borgen being brought in and Clifton, you've shored up the right side. Again, we've already had that conversation. But This is largely what the team is going to look like next year, and you're looking for steps forward from a few different guys. And obviously, the conversation going into the year, it's going to be about Minton. It's going to be about Kuznetsov. It's going to be about Hagens. It's going to be about Brunet, if he's able to make the team out of camp. And then it'll be about Borgen and Clifton and Joki Haru and how they handle that right side. And remember, McAvoy is suspended the first six games of the season, so you're going to get a really good look at Borgen early on because he's likely your top right-handed defenseman going into the year. I know that's disappointing and frustrating, but in reality, I don't see how they fix it. And because the Bruins right now are not in a position to give up a bunch of their own assets, meaning their own first-round picks, especially without protection, the ability to bring in a sure thing on that right side is low. And there's not a ton of opportunity out there for it in which the Bruins can win a bidding battle. This is what's so hard about this walking the line of retool versus rebuild. And when they decided to do a retool, you might gain some assets. And Sweeney has done a wonderful job in just this short 18-month span of building back up the cupboard a little bit. But you're still nowhere near the top echelon of teams with these assets. And there are always teams that are hitting that precipice of our rebuild is finally over. We have a ton of assets still, though, because we took so much time collecting all of them. And now we want to compete so we can go get those guys. Like, our window is now. That's what makes this so difficult. So the question really is, am I okay with that? Am I okay with going into the season like this? Largely, yes. I don't feel the Bruins missed out on a ton of real value this offseason. I love the Paterka trade, and while I have questions about the Borgen trade and the future at 1C and the second right-handed defensive spot, I haven't seen many options that are realistic. It's just a boring answer, but it's an honest one. Is this team is not where it wants to be yet. It has avenues to get there, but I think the next couple of months will be far more focused on honing in on what they have and building it out the right way. And they're not going to be giving huge assets for these star players because I just don't think they're capable of it right now. I think this is largely the team you're getting. And I understand that some of these comments are going to go, well, then we are screwed. I don't know about that. Is a step back possible? Maybe even likely? Maybe. But I feel rather comfortable with where they're at right now. And revisiting that conversation at the trade deadline next year or earlier, once the season starts, if you see that some of these things are just not a good fit. And there's still a lot to be done for next season, too. With Zacha and Mittelstadt on expiring deals, say you do get to the trade deadline and the season didn't go the way you wanted to, which is a waste of Pasta's prime, of McAvoy's prime, of Sawyer's prime. You wasted a year, right? Which is not the goal. But say you do get there and you need to make a swing. You've got guys to move the trade deadline, which is good. Which is something you want, you know? I'm rather comfortable going into the season like this. And I'm sure I will have my frustrations as we get there and concerns, but I don't see the path towards really shoring up any of the positions of doubt without a massive overpay. And I don't think the Bruins are in a position to do that. Let me know your thoughts below. Let me know what moves you think they might still make if you disagree with that take. And as always, go Bees. Go Bees!